you, everyone, for joining us this weekend on Nevada Backcountry. First, big shout out to Truck Envy. Thank you for sponsoring the show. If you guys need anything for your off-road rig, go see Andy and the crew at Truck Envy on South Virginia here in Reno. Housekeeping stuff, Dave.
Yes.
I said something in the episode last weekend about the wheels starting to come off at 700 yards.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got an email about that from somebody that said, you know, hey, I shoot out to X amount of distance all the time, and I don't think that's true for 90% of shooters, and so on and so forth. So my clarification on what I said I saw about 90% of the shooters starting to have issues at 700 and beyond due to environmentals, et cetera. In a target environment, if you've got a 12-inch plate at 800 yards and you're getting a quote-unquote hit, but you're clipping like 7 o'clock and just catching the edge of it, that's not what I consider an ethical shot on an animal. Now, 12 inches, yeah, okay, you might get a heart shot or something if you're going low, but I'm talking about like a 3-4-inch, 5-inch max group. Even on a deer size or antelope size, you're putting something through the lungs. That's what I meant by that.
By that. Okay. So you're talking the wheel, when you stated wheels coming off.
Yeah.
Is looking at their final
where they're making impact.
Yeah, where they're making impact and seeing that their consistency is kind of falling apart.
Right. Yeah. They were getting hits.
Yeah, they were getting hits, but they were, you know, they were 7 o'clock, 3 o'clock,
right,
11 o'clock, and they just, the consistency wasn't there, similar to what they were probably doing at 300 yards, where
exactly,
they were dropping them in, you know, a 3-inch group.
Exactly.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, look, I ran the plates all the way out. I mean, shoot, we talked about it on the show, hitting at a mile and everything. Yeah, I got first round impacts, but guess what? I didn't have what I would call a group I'd be happy shooting an animal
at. Or comfortable shooting an animal at. Yeah.
You know, and so for me, going out there and doing that course, it was like, okay, at 700, I'm still making center mass impacts, maybe like a 3.5-4-inch dispersion. I'm good with that group. That, for me, I consider that an ethical shot on an animal. I didn't mean guys were completely whiffing
Beyond 700.
Yeah. So anyway, Michael, I hope that clarifies. I wasn't putting anybody's capabilities down. I was just looking at groups at 700 and beyond and kind of realizing like, oh yeah, okay, if I'm in a PRS or an NRL competition, yeah, I'd get points for those hits, but it's not a hit I'd be 100% confident on an animal.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
All right. So there, that out of the way. And thank you guys for the listener feedback. We always appreciate it. Sometimes we drop the ball and we don't get to it in a timely fashion, but we address this one in a timely fashion. So let's move on to finding elk, Dave.
Yeah. I know you've been crazy busy with work and,
political season.
Your political season stuff. And so you haven't been monitoring the socials too much.
I have not, no.
But I have noticed a big increase in folks posting online asking where the elk are in certain areas. Like, I've seen several that are like, hey, has anyone found any elk in 6171? Has anyone found any elk in 111 to 115?
Some of the largest herds of the state.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. I'm kind of curious if folks are just using the internet now as their scouting tool, hoping that other hunters and outdoors people will chime in and comment, oh yeah, man, they're
just
up,
go here.
Yeah,
to
they're
this
up
grid.
Silver Canyon. Yeah. They're up, you know, deer canyon, cow canyon, you know, whatever it might be. So they're having the internet scout for them instead of actually going out there. When you say looking for elk, has anyone seen any elk? Are you talking bulls that are 370 or bigger because you're not seeing anything of that size? I mean, some of these need to be, there needs to be have more content.
Right.
Because when I read it, I'm like, it sounds like you're not seeing anything.
Yeah, and if you're asking, where are the elk?
Where are the elk in some of the, I'm like, my first thought is, are they in the right area? I mean, do they, are they sure? Because 6171, 111, 221, 231, I mean, a lot of those areas, drive down the road and you're going to probably spot some elk somewhere. Might not be your target, but you're going to see them. And then, so.
Well, and I'm glad you brought it up because with elk especially, it's a timing thing. We've had now, as we sit here now, we're into fall. There's snow in the mountains. It's been kind of unseasonably warm up until this point.
Yeah.
Last couple weeks, notwithstanding. The bottom line is, if you're driving roads at high noon, you might not see, even in some of these units that have a ton of elk.
Yeah, you might not see them.
They're first light, last light movers, and you'll catch them going in and out of timber.
Right.
You're probably not going to see them out in the middle of a wide open mountainside
at noon.
12:02. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just been a real curious question that because I've seen a bunch of it, and you know, a lot more this season than last. I know there's been a lot of chatter because it seems like the rut really was delayed, or you know, some folks didn't even catch it. I've heard a lot of folks asking about the, you know, have anyone hearing any bugling, anyone seeing any rutting, anyone, you know.
So well, asking that at this point, we're getting into
post rut now, but well, we think. I mean. As warm as it's been.
Yeah. You know?
So some of that stuff, like asking about the elk talking stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I was just kind of curious if, you know, how some of the listeners are addressing some of these.
I was going to say they were absolutely going into the rut and bugling back when I was in 062 on my dad's cow hunt.
Yeah.
And that would have been
right
September.
After archery ended, because I did hear from several buddies that were hunting right after that.
Yep.
That said that the elk had just turned on in several areas.
Right. And I showed you those videos. I mean, we were just cow chirping, calling bulls in left and right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were definitely, I always tend to think of the rut for elk as being in that latter portion of September.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, in fact, last weekend's show, my dad sat down with Mike from Battleborn Tree Service, and they were still talking, gosh, almost to the end of his hunt. So that would have been
mid-October.
That would have been beginning of October, yeah.
I mean, with how warm it's been and stuff, it probably did delay it
a little bit.
It's going to
vary unit by unit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to. And even state by state, you know, I got friends up in Oregon that's had them starting to bugle second week of September.
Okay.
They started, which would have been great for the archers in Nevada. But,
You
know, because we had some friends that were out there archery hunting. And,
And
just only time they heard any noise was at night.
Yeah.
And it's like more than that's more along the lines of like a pre-rut type of chatterbox. And but they as soon as daylight broke, boom, it was
they
dead
shut
silent.
Up and,
yeah, they just shut down and that was it.
So that's what I would tell people. If you're just looking for elk, first and foremost, if you are driving roads midday, you're not seeing elk, look at a map, find a high point that's got some nice dark canyons.
Oh, yeah.
Put the boots on and start working.
And then just sit there.
And watch.
And just watch.
First light, last light, watch. Now, it is getting colder now, so there might be some like midday activity.
Yeah, midday movement. Yeah.
I made the comment after my dad's hunt, elk hunting is work.
Oh, yeah.
It just is, from getting them down, getting them out of the field. So if you're taking to the internet, and the only looking or scouting or whatever you've done is a quick drive through the unit on the main dirt road at noon, and you didn't see anything, put a little more effort into it.
Yeah, you're just going to have to. Me personally, I don't know if I would trust a whole lot of the conversation online because I read some of the comments.
Yeah.
And it was, some of them were pretty hilarious. I mean, it was like, you know, well, look in an ag field. They're all over the place in the ag fields. Well, okay, that's probably
what good
true.
Does that
I mean,
do
how's
me?
That help you? But, you know, and some of them also were kind of poking.
Snarky?
Snarky and pointing at the person like, you kidding?
All right, so coming up on the show, let's get into rangefinders. Man, a lot of exciting developments in that field for hunters. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, thanks for hanging in there over the break, and thank you to Shooting Performance Institute in Gardnerville for sponsoring the show. In fact, this weekend, Jim has another long-range course going on. Go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com, and you can see the full list of classes, dates, prices, etc. It's shootingperformanceinstitute.com. Now, before we dive into rangefinder stuff, Dave, over the break there, we were chatting and we were kind of laughing about some of the snarky comments to these people. But without getting snarky, I want to point out, anybody listening to the show, maybe you're a newer hunter and you're one of those people that's like, man, I am struggling. I am not seeing anything. Don't take internet strangers as, or what they say as the gospel.
Oh, no.
Endow does a phenomenal job of publishing information sheets on units.
Yeah.
You can go, you can click on the species, click on the unit. It'll have general areas of where to look, where the highest population densities are, and
success rates.
Yeah, success rates. You can use that Go Hunt Insider to try to figure out, like, okay, X amount of bulls over this size came out of this unit. There's a ton of stuff out there. Don't take forum chatter as gospel truth.
Yeah. Blasting it out there on Facebook is kind of a dangerous
thing. Is that where
you
saw it on Facebook? Oh,
these were Facebook posts.
It was probably Russian bots, Dave.
Yeah, most definitely. That and
this
Chinese.
This time of year, yeah.
That and Chinese. North Koreans, too.
I would say, I'll give a shout out to Carrie Huebner.
She's awesome.
Is absolutely awesome.
She's retired now, but.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, she retired.
Oh, okay. So never mind on Carrie Huebner, but I will say years and years and years ago, I had a question about mule deer in a unit that she oversaw. I got her phone number. I got her on the phone. We talked for like an hour about the unit we were going into, et cetera, et cetera. So don't be afraid to get in touch with Endow and talk to a biologist.
Oh, yeah. All the biologists will get back to you eventually. I mean, there's a lot of field time and stuff, but they'll get back. And if not, there's generally somebody else in the office that knows the area as well.
Right.
And can guide you. But like you were saying, you got the Onyx Hunt website. You've got, Hunting the Western States websites. You've got all of these sites that you can get on and just find the clicks that you need, and they will provide some really solid information about where to go to scout, to look past people's success and where they went. So, I mean, there's tons of information out there. Just, Facebook's probably not the one to post in big, bold print.
Just don't take advice from random strangers on forum or social media pages. That's all I got to say about
take it with
stuff.
A grain of salt.
Yeah, so, amen.
But now we're going to get into some really good stuff. We're going to start talking about rangefinders and some of the cool new features that some of these rangefinders have now, as well as, some of the misnomers of some of the older units or even some of the units that are still out there.
Yeah.
The really high technology stuff is in those fairly expensive units.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
There's a lot of information out there about the difference between these rangefinders, the less expensive ones compared to the fairly high-end ones. So
just to start, you and I talked about this before the show. My rule of thumb on most of these rangefinders, even the high-end stuff, if it says it's good to 3,000 yards or whatever, cut it in half. Just realistically know, like, okay, if I bought the super laser whatever 3,000 and it says good to 3,000 yards, I'm going to go, okay, this is good to 1,500 yards. Or if it says 1,000, I'm going to go, okay, this is good to 500 yards. I think a lot of people get confused on that. And the big one I noticed recently, and we'll get into some of the range finding binoculars in a second.
Yeah.
My dad got a pair of those SIG Kilo 10 Ks or whatever they are. SIG's really high end range finding binoculars. If you actually read the fine print on, again, it's called the 10K, 10,000. If you read the fine print, it's good to 10,000 on a reflective surface. So I was telling you, we played around with them in the parking lot, and yeah, we could shoot the Atlantis or whatever. It does go out there, but you're not shooting. And when I say shooting, you know, ranging, you're not ranging a casino out in the mountains.
No.
So,
or anything really reflective.
No, no. So when you read the fine print in the manual to his things, it's like basically on large game species, so like elk, moose, etc., 4,000 yards. If you drop down to like an antelope or a coyote, something smaller, you're talking 2,000 yards. For people listening, don't get the impression that because it's labeled the SIG Kilo 10K 10,000, that it's good to 10,000 yards
on anything,
on a coyote,
right?
Because it's not.
A lot of us, especially guys, we don't read the instructions.
No,
God, we pull it out of the box, we make sure the battery's in there, and we stick it in. We stick it in our backpack, and we're on the mountain.
Yep.
That's just how it is. Like you were stating, there are a lot of rangefinders out there. Again, you got to read the instructions and understand why the title says certain things. You know, there's some out there that are, you know, 1400, 1500, 1700, 2000s. That may be, it might tell you that it's a 2000. It's the total beam distance that the beam will travel. So that means
they're
1,000 out and 1,000 back to you. So it's actually a 1,000 yard range finder, where other ones, it actually tells you that it's a 1,000, but it's an actual 1,000 yard reader or others. So you got to be really careful when you are picking these things up. Just because it says 2,000, read the fine print, it might only be a 1,000 yard reader. It might be a 2,000 beam length.
So what do you use?
So I actually have a few. I have a couple different ones. I've got the Vortec Crossfire 1400.
Okay.
I have the SIG 1500,
okay,
and then I have the Halo 450i.
Well, look at you, Dave, man.
Well, I mean,
I got to start going through your closets.
I know, right? Well, I got my son, when he started hunting, I got him the Halo 450i.
Okay.
And then I had the SIG.
Right.
You know, I had the SIG 1500, and then I won the Crossfire. Which I didn't realize, but that has been on several different websites. Best rangefinder is the Vortec Crossfire 1400.
Have you taken them out in the field, and what's the longest you've ranged with them?
So with the SIG 1500, that is one of those ones, it's beam length. And that was, I didn't realize that, which is fine because I'm not shooting anything at 1,500 yards.
Right.
So the furthest I've been able to get that SIG to give me a clean reading is about 500, 550 on an animal.
Yeah.
Again, if I'm hitting a
truck,
something
or something
reflective, something shiny, you know, I've gone out to 700-ish, 750,
okay,
you know, somewhere around that. If it's, again, reflective and it gets a really good signal. But when you get into the duller stuff, or you're trying to range something that's in the shadows of the trees or something like that, it gets questionable.
About 500-ish,
It's about 500s, that thing's max. The Halo 450, it's probably pretty dang solid to 300 yards on dull stuff. It's a great, like, archery.
That's a Bushnell, correct?
Yes, I think it is. Yeah, and it's fantastic for archery because, I mean, you're not throwing anything out that far.
No.
So, and that's why, you know, I picked it up from my son, because mainly archery and everything. So, and it's great. I mean, it gets really accurate to that 300-ish range.
Have you checked it on a measured range?
Yes. So
okay.
I've taken all of those and I've run tape.
Yeah,
all the way out to, you know, about 200 yards, you know, put flags in the ground and then range the target that I have. I usually put up like one of my 3D targets.
Yeah.
And then go out to, you know, 50, 100, 150, 200, 250, 300, and click. And both of them, the Halo and the SIG, were super duper close. And I haven't really farted around too much with the crossfire yet, but I'm assuming that thing's probably pretty dialed.
I'll warn you. So I had this experience at Reading, and I know I use the Vortex, the it's like the Razer HD 4800.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I've ranged animals out there at 1,200, 1,300 yards, and it's pretty dang accurate. But I know it's accurate because I've done the same thing where it's like, okay, this is a measured distance.
Yeah, yeah.
So I trust it. Well, when I shot Redding, gosh, however long ago it was now, somebody I was with had a Vortex. I believe it was a Ranger something or other.
Ranger or the Diamond.
Maybe it was a Diamond, but theirs was consistently about 3 to 4 yards difference. And we checked, we'll get into the angle stuff in a minute.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we checked it. Ours were, had the same settings, same everything. I know mine's good.
Yeah.
His was reading differently. And it was kind of interesting to see same brand, just different product lines.
Yeah. Was it Ebes?
No, it was Dustin Great.
Oh, it was okay.
Yeah. And let's talk about that in the next segment.
When you're dialing in your bow and stuff, you're dialing it into your rangefinder. So,
or gun or whatever.
Or gun or whatever. So when you start listening to other people and you're like, well, dude, why am I shooting this? I'm totally off. Well, you got to check it. You really got to check your modes.
Let's talk about that coming up. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for sponsoring the show. For hunters, by hunters, they get it. They'll care for your property like it was their own. Call Mike at Battleborn Tree Service. Have them come out, give you an estimate on whatever tree care projects you need done. Dave, before we went to break, we started to go into different readings between different range finders.
Yeah.
And like if my range finder, now I'm anal retentive and I do measure all my stuff to make sure it's accurate. But even if you don't do that, stick with your range finder and your gun or your bow, because your sight tapes are going to be set for that range finder.
Yes.
Your scope is going to be zeroed at that range for that range finder. Do not mix and match. If your buddy is next to you and he's got a different range finder and he says, nah, man, I got that at 103 and yours is saying like 97, shoot your range finder,
right?
Because that's the one that you use to set up your sight, whether that's a gun or bow.
Yeah.
So that, and then let's go down a rabbit hole real quick with the angle stuff.
Okay.
Because everybody just takes like, oh, well, this one does my angle compensation and this one does this, that, and the other thing. What was the one you were talking about over the break?
So from what I've been reading up on and researching is that some of the lower end range finders, and this is probably just a corporate ploy to get you to buy them. That's how I took it from it.
Yeah.
But they have what's called the VD, which is variable distance.
Okay.
And they make it kind of sound like that's like the angle compensation, but it's not.
Okay.
It has to do with the ability for the thing to focus on the target that you are trying to range.
Right.
With other things in the area,
mm-hmm.
other things, you know, like a canyon or big rocks or something like that. These rangefinders have the programming in them to know what it needs to focus on. So we'll get into, hopefully, if we don't do it right now, is the difference between a golfing rangefinder and a hunting rangefinder.
Oh, yeah. Totally different.
Totally different. Even though folks are like, oh, no. It's the same thing. There's no difference between the two besides the golfing ones are usually pretty colors, white and red and blue and green, and hunting ones are camo.
No.
They're not totally
the
different.
Yeah.
Their programming is different. Golfing ones are focused on small items to determine distance with, like twigs and the flag.
Because it's generally shorter distances.
Right, and it's focused to find that flag. It's not, it kind of takes everything in the background out of the picture and focuses on small items.
Whatever's within the closest focal plane.
And you know, yes, exactly. So the hunting programming is designed to eliminate all of the little things that may be in your picture,
right,
like branches and twigs and things like that, and focuses on large, solid
objects. Yep.
So, you know,
don't take the course one, course IQ, whatever rangefinder
right.
out.
Except
to
for
with.
Some of the brand, some of these really high end new ones coming out now actually have in their modes, you
oh,
can switch it from
or a,
golf or golf or hunting modes.
Yeah, I got to be honest with my golf game. A rangefinder is not. No,
it doesn't matter for me either. It had no,
no,
no.
So, hey, on the variable distance thing real quick. So
yeah.
I'm familiar with what that is, and that is a helpful mode for archers if you are planning a stalk, because you can
yeah.
range an animal and then move the crosshairs over to a rock, and it'll give you those two distances.
Correct.
So you can plan a stalk based on that. Now,
right.
I don't use that stuff. I just kind of take a mental picture or even a picture on my phone. And when I'm on a stalk, I just look at like, okay, I need to be at this point because he was bedded there, whatever.
Yeah.
So that variable distance thing, I could see that being useful for guys getting into archery and kind of planning stalks.
Yeah.
The one I really want to go into is Vortex uses like horizontal component distance, HCD,
uh-huh.
LOS, line of sight distance, and they'll give
yeah.
you an angle on that. Like, okay, your line of sight is 231 yards at this angle.
Right.
Here's my catch all or caveat, whatever you want to call it with the angle stuff. The way this software is programmed, it's either in increments of 5 on the higher end ones or the increments of 10 in the lower end rangefinders. And by that, I mean, if you're shooting something and you're using that horizontal component distance where it's giving you the yardage based on an angle, it could be doing it in increments of 10 degrees if it's a lower end one. So as you and I both know, when
yeah.
you get to those super steep angled shots in canyons, let's say you're at 49 degrees and your rangefinder's telling you you're at 55 or whatever, your shot is going to be off.
Right.
The more accurate way to do it is to use a cut chart or a cut sheet.
Right, exactly.
And
yeah.
shoot angles. These things, I get on my soapbox about this stuff because people buy this gadget and take what it spits out as gospel truth. And while it is a pretty good reference and it might be semi-close, if you're not right at the angle that that software is programmed for in those increments, man, it could be a clean miss at 40 and beyond with a bow.
Oh, completely.
40 yards and beyond is
yeah.
what I mean. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Because there's two other forms of distancing that's on a lot of these rangefinders. And one is THD, which is called true horizontal distance. And then the other one is HCD, which is horizontal component distance.
That's the one I'm familiar with from Vortex. The
yeah.
other one I haven't heard of before.
So the true horizontal distance takes into account, so if you're ranging something and you're at an elevated state or below it,
right?
So it will give you the true distance as if it was horizontally in front of you. So if you
gotcha.
Range it and it's at a 4% grade,
right,
and you're ranging your animal, it's going to give you the range as if the thing was perfectly in front of you.
Gotcha.
It compensates.
Yeah.
It compensates for that. So
yep.
so you're going to end up shooting high.
Right.
Because,
that's my point. With the software, you might be 4 degrees to that long shot.
Right.
But the software only recognizes either 5 or 10. Like,
right.
So it's going to spit out based on that. As far as I'm aware, there's only a couple rangefinders on the market that have true angle accuracy within 1 degree.
Yeah.
And you're talking like $3,000, these
yeah. well, my,
high-end
my
things.
SIG does it. So
oh, it
my,
does?
My SIG will give me two measurements. So my SIG, if I have
right.
it on that mode, it'll give me the true horizontal distance.
Right.
And then below it, it shows the little angle sign.
Right.
And it'll give me the angle compensation distance. And if I'm at a 10-degree angle,
right.
Hitting the animal, it'll give me that angle distance of, say, 44 yards. And
right.
then my true horizontal is 41 yards.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is the software in your SIG might be 0 degrees, 5 degrees, 10 degrees.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
15
yeah.
degrees.
So it's not, Yeah.
It's not accurate to, it's not at like, oh, okay, I'm at 3 degrees. It'll just go to 5.
Correct. Yes. And I think that's how mine works. It goes
for that compensation.
Right.
Yeah.
If I'm at 2 degrees, it won't give me
it
anything.
It won't give you anything.
Anything
yeah.
above 3, it gives me 5. Yeah.
Yes.
Cause I've read that in the manual.
Yes.
Yeah. You're right. Those really super high end ones have the algorithm within them to, if you're at, 3.72 degrees, it's going to give you 3.72 degrees difference.
Right. Right. So you follow what I'm saying now is that's because especially, and this from like the long range shooting world, if you're shooting like 800 yards and it's this, guys will click and they'll use that calculated distance.
Right.
And they'll take the shot and miss and can't figure out why they miss. Well, it's because maybe that was 7 degrees, but your rangefinder calculated it at 10.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
so
exactly.
The other setting that I like to use for like long range rifle shooting, I use the one that gives you the line of sight, but it also gives me the true angle. It doesn't have the software to do the algorithm or formula for you, but if you have an accurate math formula or you have an accurate cut chart, you can look and go, okay, so that says line of sight, I'm at 713 yards. At a 4 degree angle, look at my chart, like, oh, at 4 degrees, I need to knock off this or add this or whatever.
Yes. What I've done in the past when I've had some animals at pretty good angles is I can switch my mode to give me the cut instead of the angle variation.
Yeah, just gives you the
instead
cut.
It'll give me what the cut is because that's just a little element that's inside the rangefinder depending on the angle you're holding it.
Right.
So it'll give you the cut and then I can go to my archer's choice
and fit.
Click in the cut and the distance, throw the cut in there and then it'll give me the true
what
distance.
You should actually
if
shoot
I've
it
got
for.
The time to do it. Sometimes you don't have that kind of time to sit there and dinker with that kind of shit, but it's pretty sick. Like Timmy's got, the Zaworski rangefinder binoculars.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
Those are nice.
Yeah. Those are almost $5,000, $4,700 or something. But it gets
super
you.
Nice. We'll get into the binos here. I don't think we're going to have time for sheep on this show.
Yeah.
So we'll save that for a future episode. But let's go to break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk about some of these, I'll call them rangefinding binos with ballistic calculators in them and all the high-end whiz-bang stuff. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thanks for hanging in there over the break and rejoining us on Nevada Backcountry. If you miss a segment of the show or you miss an entire weekend because you were out chasing animals, you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab. Everything is there. You can also get our show on Apple Podcasts. Just search Nevada Backcountry. Before we went to break, Dave, we started to get into a friend of ours, Timmy, who apparently got the Swarovski rangefinding binoculars.
Yeah, I think those are the ones he picked up. He let me look through them is all I got to do. And then
he wouldn't let you touch them. He held them up to your eyes.
I held them up to my eyes. Yeah. That's probably what I preferred. Cause
I
don't want to drop those things.
They're like 3,800,
like 47, I think.
Oh,
they were at the sheep show last year and I got to check them out at the Zaworski booth area and checked and just farted around with them. I think the show price was like $41.50 or something.
Yeah, they see me coming with four kids and they'd like bring out the traffic cones to
guide you away. But yeah, this guy ain't buying anything. No. This guy's using Bushnell, I bet.
Yeah, so I've
there's anything wrong
against
with Bushnell.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the range finding binoculars, and as I mentioned in the previous segment, my dad got those SIG ones. They come now, a lot of them. I don't know if the Swarovskis do, but they come with like the whole ballistics program in them. You can load your rifle, your muzzle velocity, it'll do a density altitude for you, everything in there. it eliminates, like you're familiar with the Kestrels.
Yes.
It gets rid of a Kestrel, a handheld rangefinder, and a set of binos. It's all in one set.
Oh, that sounds so confusing.
Yeah.
I would end up buying it because I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's so cool. But I would get home and go like, I can't remember how to use this stuff.
I'm
just going to leave it on default.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's when we were playing with them. It was saying like, it was giving a come up in minutes. So like how many clicks to put on his scope and everything.
Oh my God.
And I was looking at it, I said, what'd you put in here? And he said, oh, no, that's just the factory settings. He hasn't tinkered with it yet. It does introduce a layer of complexity for rifle shooters.
And error. Huge.
And huge error.
Yeah.
Well, it can store up to, I believe it was 34 different rifle profiles. So think about that madness. Say I replace the batteries. Does it reset to the last profile?
Well, you would assume. I mean, there's got to be a component in there where there's like a little cell that is a power cell.
That keeps that stuff.
That holds it. Kind of like a lot of stuff. Like my GPS. I pull the batteries out of the GPS, get some new ones, slap them in there. All my information's still there. It's all stored and locked in there.
But right.
If I could dial in all of my archery, my bow, you know, like,
your speed,
you know, my peep to arrow, my peep to sight, all of my information, my speed, and then have it be my tape.
Put Archer's Mark software into a set of binos.
When you click with your binocs, it'll tell you, you know, set your scope to 36.4. That would be.
I think that's coming. Here's the only thing, and this is what I wanted to talk about with the binos.
Oh, Gina's going to hate you.
I know. She's those SIG things were cheap.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, Henry said, honey.
Yeah.
He said.
I guarantee that's coming because I was looking in his, and it is like I use the app Shooter, which gives me all my ballistic stuff, and I load stuff in there, but that's on my phone. I guarantee those companies like Archer's Mark, they're talking to bino companies about like, hey, you just put our software in there.
Or even some of the high-end rangefinders now talking with them to put it in there. So,
but I did want to say on the bino thing, I don't know that I'll ever get away from a handheld rangefinder for archery hunting. And here's why. With a set of 10 power binos, say I got a deer bedded at 23 yards. Can you imagine trying to like look and find that and then click and did I hit that? Did I hit this?
Yeah.
There's that nice thing with a handheld where it's like, oh, it's 1-to-1 or I think mine's like a 3 power or something.
Yeah, mine's my SIG is 2 to 6 power.
Oh, so yours is even adjustable.
I can dial.
Mine is fixed. I just think about those. You've been on those stocks where it's like this long and you're down to socks and you're creeping and you're moving like a robot. I don't know. It just seems easier for me the way I do my stocks. I got it's already in my hand. Yeah. I get to my final, like, here's where I am. It's a click and then it's down and I'm not trying to fiddle with stuff.
Trying to put the binoculars back in the case.
Then I'm like one of those guys on the strip, the statue people, where I am just frozen until that sucker gets out of his bed. Then I'm sending an arrow.
Yeah.
I could see it being applicable to tournament archery.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But yeah, I agree with you. With hunting, I would have to still have my handhelds because that's too bulky when you get into 40 or less yardage and you're...
I can't, if I'm carrying a bow and I'm holding a heavy set of binos, I can't get them still to click a ring. You know,
especially,
I got my bow.
Like you said, especially if they're 8, 9, 10 power binoculars, you're like, I
can't find this thing.
Big old brown blob right there.
Trying to pick apart the bitter brush. So I don't know if it'll really catch on in the bow hunting community. Now that said, hey, Timmy's a bow hunter, and he's got a pair of them.
But I don't know if he's got all that programming stuff. He's had this pair for a couple of years. I don't think he's got...
I don't know that the Swarovski do. Yeah.
I think
their whole thing, you know, people buy Swarovski for the glass.
Yeah, for the clear... Yeah, for the... I mean, it's almost like they massage your eyeballs.
They are awesome.
Beautiful. So one thing I did want to say on that rangefinders, and I'm sure with the binoc systems as well, is so if you guys are out there and buying yourselves some new rangefinders or have yours and you've never tinkered with them or read the instruction manual, I truly advise it because here it says all manufactured rangefinders are set to a default distance target mode.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
So it recommends going in there and changing your modes to best benefit the use that you are going to have, you know, what you're going to use the rangefinders for. So
okay.
Some of them you maybe have to activate and calibrate. It might ask you on
to
my
go
six, you've got to go through a process
right.
for the angle portion.
Oh, okay.
So you got to go out and you got to hit it a few times at different, you know, go up and down. Kind of like if you're like with a drone and you're trying to calibrate a drone so it flies back to you. You got to do like a 360 circle
yep.
and make sure the lights blink a certain way. Probably similar with these things. You got to calibrate the angle thing and you got to, you know, do some calibration. So anyone out there that's got your rangefinder, you're like, this is garbage, man.
Maybe. I'm missing shots I shouldn't miss.
Yeah, read the instruction manual.
You know what's funny, Dave, is you say that, and I sit upon a throne of lies over here because I can offer advice and say, you should do this. I didn't read the manual for mine.
You know what? I've got to go back and read the manual for the Halo, and I'm definitely going to have to read the manual for the Vortec one. Like the Halo one, I've had it for years. I did the Total Guy thing. I took it out of the box, stuck the battery in there, and I've been using it.
Right.
And then handed it to my son. Hey, bud, this is yours. You know, let's go do some hunting.
I read a quick thing about the angle, like which mode to have it in and all that. But as far as, you know, that's like page two. I don't think I went deeper than that.
No, I think I just read the cover of the instructions. It said Halo 450i.
Perfect.
Done.
Yeah.
That's what I got. Yeah.
I wonder about
these things
that.
Are getting like, you know, this equipment, like, you know, scopes, rangefinders, binoculars, rangefinder units and stuff. They're getting like new cars and trucks. There's so many gadgets and stuff on them that I'll never use 90% of the stuff that's on my truck.
Oh, yeah. God, no.
Ever.
God, no. Yeah.
Ever.
I hear the music. It's time for us to get out of here. Thank you sincerely to everyone for tuning in, and big thanks to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. Don't go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.